Have you been told you don't fit in? The way you live isn't right? You don't look the right way, you don't act the right way, you don't love the right people, you don't believe the right thing? Do you feel the pull of spirituality deep within you and long for a place where you can express it, but keep running into places that want to put you into a box, turn you into another member of their cookie-cutter community where everybody looks the same, everybody lives the same, everybody talks the same, everybody sits in neat little rows, and nobody asks any questions? Welcome. You found a home, because this is the Christ and Light Podcast. And at Christ and Light, we celebrate your diversity. We understand the truth that everybody and everything was created wholly good, absolutely complete and loved, and that each one of us is a bearer of God. Join us now as we discuss the implications of that in our lives, as we explore ways to live out the truth that all of us are Christ events, called to shine forth in the world. Indeed, it is the Christ and Light Podcast. I'm your genial host, Bishop Craig Berglund, and I'm awfully glad, as always, that you have decided to join me today. It is indeed a special day as I record this. It is Friday, March 23rd, and as I speak to you, I must confess, my pants are wet. Now, that may be something that shocks most of you, and some of you, at least, I'm relatively certain, have gone straight to the gutter with that confession. And shame on you if you have, because my pants are wet, because I have been out in the rain all day. And I have learned some things while out in the rain today, and we're going to talk about those on today's program. They are not as boring as you might think things one learns in the rain could be. I should probably mention right off the bat that if your pants are wet as well, please get some help, because I didn't notice you while I was out in the rain today, which means your pants are wet for an entirely different reason, and I don't want to know the details because that would be oversharing. Just correct the problem. Anyway, I was out in the rain today because, as some of you may be aware, I have this small business where I do property inspections. Really, occupancy and exterior property inspections. Nothing as skilled as climbing up on the roofs of houses to decide if people are paying too much for them, because, quite honestly, there are very few things in this world that have less appeal to me than climbing up on the roofs of houses. I don't care how much money you're willing to pay me. I have a rule, and that rule is that one of my feet need to be in contact with the ground at absolutely all times, unless I trip and fall. And then I violate my own rule. And that does happen with astonishing regularity, I must confess. But at least both feet are in the air only briefly. And I cannot fall more than whatever distance it is from whatever part of me happens to strike the ground first to the ground. I don't want to be falling off of roofs. A whole lot of people have been killed falling off a roof. And I am not yet ready to go. I have so much to contribute, like these insights into culture that I'm about to share with you. You know, some of my best friends are black. And some of my best friends are gay. And some of my best friends are gay and black. But that's really to digress. And I say that not... Well, I say that very intentionally in the way that I said it, because I understand what it implies. And one of the things I want to talk about is that there's no good way to say, as a heterosexual white man, I have a lot of gay friends. Because it sounds like I'm saying, I really can't stand gay people, but I want to convince you that I can, that I do like them, so I'm going to tell you that I have a lot of gay friends. Even though they don't follow me around in entourage, so that I can just show them to you. Now, I have tried, by the way, to get my gay friends to follow me around in entourage, but for some reason that I can't quite understand, that doesn't appeal to them. I point out to them that it's true that my daughter and many of her friends, my daughter was kind of unusual in high school, in that she liked to follow gay males around, and she's not unattractive and massively overweight. Now, some of you are thinking that that was mean and unfair, but next time you go to the mall, just take a look. To use the existing phrase, I didn't make this up myself, I, as a straight man, have always wanted some hags to follow me around. But I've never been able to achieve that goal. It's one of the things I intend to work on over the next decade or so, getting an entourage. Now, I'd prefer an entourage of relatively attractive people, but beggars can't be choosers, I guess, when it comes to entourages. Entourage I? Is there even a plural of entourage? Anyway, I also, I mentioned that as a bit of digression to get to the point where I say, I have quite a few black friends. And my mother used to say that to prove that she wasn't prejudiced, because she had one who she worked with. So it wasn't really a voluntary association. But I don't mean it that way at all. I mean, I have friends of color. And one of the things that, in fact, I have a brother from another mother of color, which is one of the ways you can tell that we're not from the same mother. And he explained to me, when I told him that I had started this business, wherein I do occupancy and property inspections on properties, that I don't really, in truth, I don't know why I'm doing the inspection. But if you have, say, a brain larger than your average flea, it's not too hard to figure out that the reason I'm doing these inspections is because a lot, although not all, of these properties are in some stage of arrearage on their house payments, perhaps even in foreclosure or pre-foreclosure, and that's very sad, and to tell you the truth, I was a bit conflicted, and still remain a little bit conflicted, frankly, about the fact that I'm making money as a result of the banks having been irresponsible and the causing this economic collapse, and the particular vehicle through which they were most irresponsible was their mortgage practices. But when push came to shove and I said, you know, we need this money to live, I didn't feel quite as bad about what I'm doing. After all, I didn't create the problem, and I'm not the one that is pushing these foreclosures forward. I'm merely protecting the property by keeping an eye on it, and to a certain extent protecting the neighborhood as well, so that when these properties become vacant, someone's aware, so that they get secured, and so that if somebody breaks in, they get resecured. And so the kinds of illegal activities that often happen in vacant homes are less likely to happen. And so I can rationalize what I'm doing that way. Anyway, when I started doing this, and even to this point, I have a couple of different neighborhoods. One is kind of a, it's suburban, but it's very, it's first ring suburb, very much in the city, around the area of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and the parts of Milwaukee that are there. Others in my neighborhoods are largely populated by African-American folk, and another one of my neighborhoods is largely populated by Hispanic folk. And to prove just how hip I am, I actually live in one of the neighborhoods that I do inspections. I am not a member of the majority ethnic group in my neighborhood, and I'm just fine with that. Anyway, when I told my brother from another mother, Bishop John Selders, about what I was doing, and he said that when they were growing up, if they saw a white man in the neighborhood with a clipboard, a white short-sleeve shirt and a tie on, and some sort of pair of pants, of course, they knew that was the insurance man. And the insurance man would come around and regularly collect the payment that was due on the insurance policies. And I don't go around in that particular attire. I mean, I wear some pants, of course, and a shirt with a collar on it, but certainly not a tie and certainly not a white dress shirt. And the other thing he said, and some other folks have said, that the other thing that a white person with a clipboard means sometimes is the department, depending on what it's called in your area, the Child Protective Services, the Department of Health and Family Services, somebody's coming to check up on what's going on in your house. And I have noticed that at intervals when I pop out of my van with my clipboard and my admittedly Caucasian face, people do beat a hasty retreat for inside, particularly in the black neighborhoods. In the Hispanic neighborhoods, they're not on the street as much anyway, and I think they may think that I might be immigration or something when they run inside. But be that as it may, whatever the case is, I was out today, getting rained on, soaked through to the bone. And as I got out of my car at one of my stops, I noticed one of those, I don't know if you've ever seen these, those mega strollers that daycares use that seat, this one seated 8 children, and there were 7 kids in the stroller. They like sit in pairs, and they get quite tall. I mean, they sort of, everybody sits up a layer. It's sort of like pushing a small set of bleachers down the street. And I noticed that in the back row of the stroller, there was a seat empty. Now, hold that thought. I've related to some of you in the past that a little more than a year ago, or maybe just about a year ago now, around there, I retook a Myers-Briggs type personality test. And having done a fair amount of personal self-exploration and self-discovery, I think I know myself better than I used to, and so I answered the questions probably a little differently than I would have in the past, but still reflecting my true self. And it turned out that for my particular personality type, an ESTP, many of us are salesmen. Now let me say, backing up even a little further, that when I was in my 20s, I did field service on diagnostic ultrasound equipment, and if there's one thing service people didn't like, it was salespeople. Because salespeople were always making promises that service people had to follow through on, and sometimes the promises they made were for things that didn't even exist yet. But they would tell the customer that we could do this for them. Now, I'm pretty good, but I'm not that good. And so we used to refer to our salesmen as, if you'll pardon the expression, and I may have to call this one explicit again, but I don't think so because I'm not going to drop the F-bomb, asshole salesman. So I retook the Myers-Briggs, and it comes up salesman, and I said to my wife, this says I'm an asshole salesman.
And I started to read off the characteristics, and she just started laughing hysterically. Not because she thought they weren't accurate, mind you. And even I had to confess, although not to her, but to myself and then later to her, that, yeah, this is pretty much me, that there is a part of me that is the salesman. I'm one of those people that just likes to engage people. And so I saw these two young ladies dressed in the scrub top that seems to be obligatory daycare wear around here, pushing the mega jumbo bleacher stroller down the street with an empty seat. And I happened to be pulling over to inspect the house, and I popped out of the car and said, "Hey, is that seat for me?" Because I'm charming like that. And one of them looks at me and says, "Are you the insurance man?" Now, I am crushed on so many different levels, I can't even tell you. First of all, I'm a nice guy. And God love those of you who may be, or know, or maybe even be in relationship with an insurance salesman. I find them a little tedious in social settings, unless I need to do business with them, but then that's not a social setting. I love my insurance man, Tom Brass of the Brass Agency. Let's give him a plug. In Heartland, Wisconsin, if you need auto, home, or any other kind of insurance, the Brass Agency, Brass, just like the Brass Bell, or the Brass Monkey. I like Tom. I've never been in a social setting with Tom. He may be an alright guy in a social setting. I did a wedding for at least one insurance guy who I really liked, but I'll be honest with you, most of the insurance guys I've met are, well, what's the word I'm looking for? Spectacularly boring and dorkish. And it seems all they can talk about is insurance. So for me to be mistaken for an insurance man was devastating. Can't I be a nice white guy with a clipboard in an African-American neighborhood? Largely. Without being the insurance man? So I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll send a message to my wife. She'll say something to comfort me. I sent her a message, and she basically replied with laughter via text message. I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll send a message to my brother from another mother, saying I've just been mistaken for the insurance man. He not only sent a text message back laughing, he, in fact, called me to laugh about it. So now, here's what I want to know. Do I really seem that much like a carpetbagger? Because, let's be honest, even here in the North, the white insurance man going into the black neighborhood to sell insurance and then going back to his white neighborhood seems an awful lot to me like the carpetbaggers from the North that went to the South after the Civil War to make money and take their money back to the North. Now, in my defense, I'm not selling anybody anything. And my money doesn't leave the neighborhood. But still, what is it that makes a white guy in a black neighborhood either the insurance man or Child Protective Services. Now, I feel better, quite frankly, about being Child Protective Services. Having worked in social services and mental health and things like that, I don't have any problem being identified as someone from one of those fields. But an insurance man? A used car salesman who stepped up in life? Retired the plaid sport coat and just wears a shirt and a tie? Mm-hmm. But you see, here's the issue. White people are still afraid of black neighborhoods. White people get scared just driving through black neighborhoods. And the interesting thing is, if you look at crime statistics by zip codes in the Milwaukee area, they don't vary by zip code. They're pretty much the same, and I'll grant you the statistics aren't good, but they aren't any better in the predominantly white areas, or white zip codes, if you will, in the city of Milwaukee. And since the statistics are broken down by zip code, I'd have to believe that broken down by zip code in the report, I'd have to believe that they are accumulated by zip code as well, so it's not as if they came up with one big crime compilation for the city of Milwaukee and slapped it in every zip code. But there's more. Because if you're afraid to go there, then you're certainly afraid to do business there. And if you're afraid to go there and you happen to be somebody who's thinking about opening a business, you certainly aren't going to open the business there. And while that's your privilege, I mean, you can open your business anywhere you damn well please if it's your business, do we start to see a kind of economic segregation? You know, there's all manner of politicians and other sorts of idiots who want to say that people who live in black neighborhoods don't know what it is to get up and go to work and all this kind of nonsense. But the truth is, the opportunities just aren't there. And I find it especially interesting as someone who is a priest and bishop and a spiritual teacher that when I go into largely or predominantly black neighborhoods, there is automatically an air of suspicion and distrust, as perhaps there should be. If, after all, the only people who saunter into your neighborhood are either going to take your money for insurance purposes, or take your children. You shouldn't be all that popular, to be quite honest with you. Now, I'm not saying that we don't need to sometimes remove children from homes, but that's not a situation that's unique to any one ethnic group. And I'm not saying that it's wrong to check up on people who've had trouble with their parenting. These things are all well and good. What I'm saying is we're lacking a presence. We're afraid. And that fear, of course, has come home to roost in especially unpleasant ways of late, most notably in the Trayvon Martin case. Now, I have a lot to say, actually, about Trayvon Martin. But I don't intend to say it today. I may write a blog about it next week. I want to let some time transpire. I have some sociological questions as a result of this case, none of which involves Trayvon Martin being anything but a victim. And his shooter, I've heard different things about the shooter. I've heard George Zimmerman portrayed as both a white man and a brown man. It doesn't matter what color he is. He could be white, he could be brown, he could be green, for all I care. The truth is, he clearly is a racist, and you don't have to be white to be a racist. And he shot and killed Trayvon Martin because he was a black young man with a hoodie on. But can we be clear that while George Zimmerman is a lunatic, there's a whole lot of people who are afraid of a whole lot of other people just because of the color of their skin or the neighborhood that they live in? And a lot of that fear comes from a lack of exposure. Just as it's very difficult to hate somebody after you develop a relationship with them, you know, or be afraid of gay people, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people. A lot of people who have difficulty with the LGBT community, who believe it's wrong, who believe it's sinful, who believe it's evil, once they're informed that somebody they already know and love is LGBT or T, all of a sudden, now that I know somebody, a lot of my biases, my stereotypes, my preconceptions have to fall away because I see they aren't true. I was told by a SWAT officer about a year ago from Milwaukee, who's a SWAT officer in the Milwaukee Police Department, that some sections, and at the time I wasn't doing this work, but some sections of the neighborhoods I'm now in are among the highest crime rates for things like carjacking and assaults in the city of Milwaukee. So when I get out of my vehicle, I'm not going to leave it running or leave the keys in it or not lock it. And I'm going to pay attention to what's going on and look around and be alert and be prepared to defend myself if necessary. But the odd thing is, I haven't had any problems at all. And let's be honest, for the people who know why I'm coming there, I'm not bringing good news. Whether they're property owners or tenants, the fact that I'm showing up reminds them that their future place of residence might not be their current place of residence. And so I go, well, I don't really go out of my way to be friendly. I don't want to say that because I'm friendly to everybody I meet, sometimes embarrassingly so for my wife. But the fact that I'm friendly then makes me the insurance man. Couldn't it make me a movie star? I'm just struggling with that whole insurance man thing. But beyond that, as we look to a future where we're looking to decrease violence in our cities, and I was invited to the most inane thing that's going on tonight here in Milwaukee, that's looking at some people who think they're decreasing violence in Chicago, and when you really look into it, and when you know people, as I do, I even have friends that are working to decrease violence in the world. I am such a guy. I'm like a Heinz 57 of attraction. Even as you look at that, anyway, I was invited to this inane thing about, you know, supposedly external measures and that can decrease violence. What we need to do if we really want to decrease violence is, first of all, get people together, get the white community not just to establish sister churches inside black and Hispanic neighborhoods that they can send money to, but get these people on the ground and in the neighborhoods and meeting people where they live, and start knocking down these barriers that keep opportunity out of neighborhoods that are currently blighted and underprivileged. Because you know what? With the exception of one woman who was all cracked up and mad that I didn't accept her advances, I haven't met anyone who's been unpleasant with me. And that despite the fact that I'm not bringing great news. Necessarily. Depending on who they are and their circumstance. Or I could be. Who knows? As I said, I don't actually know why I'm making the specific reason I'm making the specific visit. But it's amazing that when we start to see one another as human beings and relate to one another as human beings, we start to break down barriers, and people don't need to be afraid to move in to certain neighborhoods. They don't need to be afraid to start businesses in certain neighborhoods where they have groups of people close by who are looking for a job. I mean, it isn't like there'd be a dearth of employable people. And yes, so it's a good idea to lock your car. That's a good idea wherever you go today, because, you know, the funny thing is people have legs, and at the end of their legs there's feet. And so they can get to your car wherever it is if they really want to break into it. But as the economic playing field gets leveled, the frustration starts to be reduced, the anger starts to be reduced, and the reasons for senseless violence go away. And then when the white guy comes to your neighborhood, he's not necessarily looking to take your money for your insurance policy, but he might be coming to give you a job so that you can earn money for yourself rather than him taking it away and leaving. And it's not an option. You know, so many people believe this is an option. It's not optional. If our cities are to survive, if our towns are to survive, we need to do this. It's not a question of being a goody-two-shoes or a do-gooder or a bleeding-heart liberal or anything else. Because we're all interconnected, when people in our cities suffer, we suffer too. When neighborhoods in our cities are blighted, we're blighted as well. And when our cities burn, we burn too. It's not a problem that we can run away from. Because when we run away from it, it just gets worse. It's an opportunity that we need to engage. Right now. And I'm here to say that if you believe you're a person of faith or spirituality and you're not willing to engage it, you're deceiving yourself. Until next time, I'm Bishop Craig Berglund. I wish you God's rich blessings. Namaste. We thank you for joining us for this Christ and Light program. We're glad you decided to join us. Christ and Light offers a variety of programming and teachings available throughout the week. Christ and Light podcast uploads weekly, usually on Monday mornings, and discusses a contemporary spiritual issue or teaching from a Christ and Light perspective. Christ and Light has a program on Blog Talk Radio on Wednesday mornings and Sunday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific. On Wednesdays, our program looks at spiritual issues with a sense of humor, even when those issues are extremely serious. On Sunday mornings, we offer a weekly Sunday morning message based on a Christ and Light interpretation of the Revised Common Lectionary Scripture readings for that day. All of our internet programming is available at no cost to you. To learn more, visit our ChristandLight.org website or access the podcast and the Blog Talk Radio program at no charge to you on iTunes. We also write an engaged spirituality blog, which is available on the ChristandLight.org website. We blog Monday through Friday, and also on each morning, we upload a spiritual teaching for the day 7 days a week. There is a Christ and Light gathering in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. To learn more about that gathering, visit the Christ in Life website. This program is copyright 2011 and 2012 by the Ecumenical Franciscans of the Renewal. All rights are reserved. For permission to reprint or use audio from this program, please write christinlife@gmail.com. We thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Bishop Craig Berglund. I wish you God's rich blessings. Namaste.